to signal via the speaking queue. We'll take any questions for. I'm sorry. I mean, it's just put me in such a good mood, that talk. I'm just gonna burst into laughter at any moment. Excuse me if I do. So if I could ask you to go to the speaking queue and indicate, and I'll recognise you and take your contributions. So we've got Paula. If you'd like to make your point or ask your question, comrade.
Thank you, Andy. I really enjoyed your talk.
Good, thank you.
No, it was really good. And I really enjoyed your cave painting. I was lucky enough to go to Lascaux and see the cave painting there. And it really struck me how these people that lived thousands of years ago are just like us. You know, I felt a real kind of relationship with people from, you know, obviously thousands of years ago. And the thing about music I found really interesting, because I can remember at one time learning about how music originated with drumming, and how that's a really ancient tradition too. But I think in socialism, we will still want to have fun, to have parties, to celebrate. I think we'll still want to give each other gifts. But I think the gifts we give will be very personal. It'll be, oh, Andy, that was a really good talk. I'm going to do a little painting for you. Or, you know, Steve, I'm going to write a little poem for you. Or Laura, do you know what I mean? I'm going to make a little dress for you. So it'll be about us sort of, I don't know, it's not about buying things, is it? It's not about taking things off a shelf. It's about actually making some kind of personal donation to another person. Maybe even picking up pebbles off a beach and giving them to someone in a nice arrangement. So that's what I have to say about gifts. But I'm just blabbing here. But basically, I really enjoyed your talk. So thank you, Andy.
Thank you. And I think there's a couple of really interesting things to, you know, pick up on there as well. The thing about music, and, you know, as a musician as well, and the idea of the human brain, the way our the bones in our skull are designed, we can recognize musical pitches, and we can recognize the difference between musical pitches. You know, the harmonic series in music is basically hard designed into our oral systems, which basically means that we are able to, you know, music truly is a universal language. And I think that it's almost inconceivable to imagine our furthest ancestors not finding joy in celebrating, once they rhythms in the early. And if you look at the folk music, most folk music that we dance to in the Morris is kind of, you're going back to 17. You're going back to agricultural societies in which really vibrant peasant life. You know, it's a this sort of Monty Python idea that, you know, everybody lived in shit, really, and, you know, in the hovels. And but actually the vibrancy of folk life, you know. And I think the other interesting thing that I got from your comment was, in the course of this research, loads of stuff I had to leave out, really fascinating stuff. But when they researched gift giving, again, in sort of English agricultural communities, where basically, I mean, if you look at the shared work, the shared ownership of things like plough horses, and the democratic distribution of common land to farm, and what they found is that, I mean, obviously we don't have records of things being riches and treasures being buried with people as we do with the ruling classes, but they found very intimate things like rings, even like sandals, small sandals, which were given by perhaps given by children, or things which were of value, very intimate things of value given to people and are found either buried with them or listed in their household possession. So I absolutely, you know, agree with you that in terms of value, these will be the kind of gifts which will keep their value in social society, without a doubt.
Okay, thanks, Carl, and thanks, Paula and Andy. Can I take Moggy next, please?
Hello, and thank you, Andy. That was a wonderful talk, and congratulations on being a Morris dancer. We've got some great Morris sides in New Zealand.
Great.
And I would really like you to send me more details. Adam's got my email address, and I'd really love to have more details about your Morris side, because I'm good friends with the Morris side in Wellington.
Excellent.
In fact, I have played the lagophone with the Morris side, so if you need a good lagophone player, I'm your girl.
Fantastic.
And I don't want to ask any questions. I just want to sort of say how... I believe that, you know, Christmas is just one of these reasons for people to get together, because basically we all like getting together and having a party and having fun. And in the southern hemisphere, of course, like New Zealand, Christmas is in the summer. So it's not, Christmas isn't just one day of the year. It goes from the beginning of December right to the end of January, because the schools are on holiday and it's parties, barbecues, socializing, everyone having a good time. So, you know, we don't just sort of think of it as being one day of the year when everyone's giving each other presents and all that, because we do spread it out. However, in the middle of winter, we have a Christmas celebration because we need something to cheer us up in the middle of winter. So about the... round about the 25th of June or somewhere like that in the middle of the year. Well, not so much individuals, but restaurants will put up Christmas decorations and people go out for a Christmas dinner and they have Christmas crackers and they put the party hats on and things like that. It's just a way of having a midwinter celebration, any excuse for a party, in fact. So, yeah, that's how we do it down here. So if you want two Christmases, come to live in the Southern Hemisphere.
Well, I'll definitely make sure that I send you as much as I can about the Loose Women Morris, Moggy. No worries.
Okay, can we take... Can I take Joel Thompson next, please?
Thank you, Andy, for the talk. Couple of points. I read once that there's an influence on Morris dancing from the Moors. Is that true?
Yeah, this is. I mean, when we look at the origins of Morris dancing, and they are obscure, to be fair. You know, we're really sort of going over by little kind of snippets in, you know, old, mostly in sort of parish warden records. You know, trying to kind of chase them out of places where they were trying to practice their pagan cult. But one theory is the word comes from Moorish, being Morris, and indeed that would also kind of play into the idea that this could also have been a kind of early example of blacking up in some ways. I suppose in when we look at a lot of the mama, you know, the mama plays, you've probably seen those around, you know, St. George and such like. And the devil is usually, you know, has a black face, and this refers to the, perhaps quite possibly to the Moors. But yes, indeed, that's certainly one plausible theory.
Thank you. And the other question was, I think you mentioned about the capitalists or some research had been shown that the capitalists don't, it's not profitable for them, Christmas, but surely there must be like a certain one set of the capitalist class who say are producing all the goods and services for Christmas, which you buy as presents. Surely they must be benefiting. And on the other hand, say factories that close down for Christmas and offices I suppose they would sort of, because there's no production going on, I suppose they would feel that they're not making any money.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be again interested to hear Adam's take on this as an economist. But just from the reading which I've been doing, which kind of quite surprised me, but I suppose if you look at it logically, workers only have a certain amount of disposable income through the year. And what tends to happen is that so Christmas doesn't increase the amount of capital available to workers. It basically means they just concentrate their spending in that bubble. And then, as we all know, there's that terrible January, February period where we basically exist on biscuits and bowls of rice. So I think that's one aspect of it. It doesn't actually increase the amount of wealth which is available to buy capitalist goods. The second thing, as you say, is the closing down of production, and in practice, you know, that people going sick afterwards and such like, that's probably a major factor. And the third one really is this sort of idea of this kind of dead weight of gift giving, which is kind of an extraordinary thing. The implication being that, I mean, when I read this chap's research, this American chap at Yale, and he did a research amongst his sort of student base at three or four universities, and something like 20% of the gifts that people were given at Christmas were then became were either not used, put in a loft. You know, it's the old sort of Christmas pullover syndrome. I don't know what the implications of that are for economic growth or prosperity. But I'd imagine not on the positive side. And then just finally, which I didn't really go into a lack of time, but this idea of manufactured festivities. And exactly, you're right, Joel. The idea that if you can invent something, then you can have the greeting card, the capitalist greeting card segment of that area are likely to benefit. Certain segments of the capitalist class, so I guess, are bound to benefit. But overall, the economist general conclusion seems to be that Christmas does not actually represent an economic boost for the capitalist class overall.
Thank you. And thank you for the explanation, and thank you for the informative talk.
Okay, thanks. Could I just ask a very quick question? Could you give us the name of that miserable American that you mentioned?
Yes, it's an absolutely wonderful name. In fact, I think I've sort of left out various parts of his name, sort of Junior, the Third, and such like. But he's, where are we? Yes. Joel, and his second name is Waldfogel. I guess you'll be the American pronunciation, Waldfogel. And he has a fantastic quote. He says, Christmas is a time of immense frustrations, of the holiday season harbored by many. The most common frustration is the obligation to buy gifts. It looms over us like the sword of Damocles. We dread the inevitable shopping fiasco and despise Black Friday. We hate not knowing what to get or buying for people who already have more than they need. Wonderful.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Okay.
That sounds like socialists.
Sounds like us miserable buggers, yeah. All right. But enough of that. Mike Foster, please.
Hello there. Yeah. Thank you, Andy. That was a very interesting talk. Yeah. And lots to think about that I hadn't thought much about before myself. So I had a, a bit of a think about, how celebrations might look in socialism. And, I hope that, sort of nature-based celebrations would survive, although, something like Harvest Festival wouldn't sort of mean the same. But, I think celebrations, as well as a way of sort of socialising, that kind of celebration, it does sort of remind you of your, your links to the past and links to nature. So I think there's something important about that. With you know, faith-based celebrations, you know, of course, there's not just the Christian ones, but, you know, ones in the, you know, Muslim and Sikh and calendar as well. And because obviously, you know, a sizable chunk of the population are religious at the moment, it's going to take a long, long time for that to, you know, wither away or stop being so popular. But maybe faith-based celebrations will continue, but with their origins being seen as sort of mythology, you know, or legends rather than supposed truths. You know, I suppose you could maybe say that for a religion as a whole. But, you know, and you know, it's perfectly possible to celebrate Christmas in an atheist way. You know, I do, but also I don't know enough about other faith-based celebrations to comment on those. And maybe as well, socialism will sort of celebrate achievements a bit more. I don't know, there might be a moon landing day, or, you know, a day to mark whenever someone invents a teleport or something like that. And also as well, I think maybe something that will morph over from capitalism into socialism. Obviously now we have, you know, festivals, you know, there's music festivals, book festivals, art festivals, and maybe they won't be, well, they obviously won't be the, you know, sort of the marketing opportunities that they are now, but you know, those kinds of art festivals might be seen more as celebrations, you know, celebrating culture or celebrating artistic achievements. So, yeah, they might be seen as celebrations in a way that they're not now. So, yeah, I suppose that was just some of my rambling thoughts about how celebrations might look in a socialist society. But, interesting and, yeah, very thought-provoking topic. Yeah, thank you. Cheers.
That's Mike. Yeah, I kind of feel same way. I mean, it's interesting if you look at, for example, our company has an office in China and also in Delhi. So I've kind of got a little bit of experience of their celebrations, and Chinese New Year being linked to, you know, astrological signs, not in a sense kind of, you know, religious in that sense. But I mean, it's hard to imagine, as you say, that any of this stuff or nonsense will really survive. And I think that anybody who's been to Malaysia, you know, where they celebrate you know, the Christian festivals, the Hindu festivals, and the Muslim festivals, I mean, basically nobody works for about 2.5 weeks. Extraordinary stuff, you know. But it's so yes, I'm sure that there'll be plenty of other stuff to celebrate. Absolutely.
Paddy, do you want to come in then? Thank you.
I really enjoyed the talk as well. Thanks a lot, Andy. Some really interesting stuff in there. I love that bit about the acoustic use of caves by people who painted it. That kind of explains some hard to explain things about why the pictures were put in such inaccessible places. That was brilliant. Got to tell you, the Red Santa, the Coca-Cola thing, that's a well-debunked myth. It's been debunked really? For a long time. Yeah. Yeah, there were Red Santas around in the 1880s. just general views. It's always occurred to me that life turns around cycles. You know, there are cycles in nature, there are cycles in life. And it just seems natural to mark the turn of those cycles. You know, the ancients did it. I always thought it was really funny that the reason that the Romans celebrated 12 days of Saturnalia is because their calendar was so crap, based on a 10-month year, that they ran out of days. And they had 12 days left over they couldn't account for, so they all just got pissed up and parted. I imagine in socialism, the sort of things we'd be celebrating would be those sort of cyclical things. Obviously, the kind of things that happen now, births, marriages, deaths. I remember reading once in the Middle Ages, every third day was a day off because they always had some saint's day to celebrate. They didn't get weekends, of course, but I worked out that every third day off was actually slightly better than just having a weekend. Anyway, so they had quite a lot of leisure. I thought it was interesting you mentioned Marx and the spirit, you know, this kind of spiritual dimension. So I was wondering if, you know, maybe socialist society, when it's got over the old religions, will kind of reinvent itself as a sort of new age cosmic society. I don't know. But what I don't think will happen, and I agree with what you said about gift-giving being a sort of dead weight. I mean, it just seems to me like, I'm not sure where it started, but surely it must have started as people's way of showing that they care about somebody, but in a commodity society, it's just become a crushing weight on everybody. And, you know, in socialism, people will not identify themselves by what they own, and they won't communicate by way of things, surely. Accept what Paul is saying about, you know, I might make somebody a dress or make someone a cake or something, fair enough, but I just can't imagine gifts or things being a big part of any kind of celebration in socialism, because why would you? Because everything's free anyway. So, I mean, what's the value of me giving you something if you can just go and get it for yourself? So, so that's me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting what you're saying about the natural cycles. I mean, how people will interact with the environment. If we're talking about, you know, automation, for example, you know, it's hard to say, because obviously what made those agricultural festivals work and really be necessary, not only in terms of getting the gods on your side, but also celebrating when really hard, backbreaking work had been done, like bringing in the harvest. You can really see why those were very, you know, visceral festivals. I mean, what we see now, I think, is that people have completely lost one of the things about Brexit, you know, is that you probably won't be able to get non-seasonal food. It will be more difficult to get non-seasonal food. And then people are going to have to start sort of thinking about actually what seasonal means. And probably if we're looking at having sort of read some very interesting work that members of the party have done on agricultural production, on automation, but also on sort of local management of agriculture, will more people become more, if you like, you know, viscerally involved in the actual process of planting, of harvesting, and planning? And then does that then lead to almost naturally a kind of wish to celebrate that and to plan ahead those kind of meetings you might have, which might turn to celebrations and such like? So I think this, to me, is like one of the most fascinating things. And certainly as a, you know, when we dance in Morris, it's very much, you know, all the festivals that we dance, like Beltane and these things are all agricultural festivals, you know, and the Green Man and such like. So that to me is one of the most intriguing questions, really, about socialism and celebration.
Thanks, Andy. Just make a quick comment. I'm not sure you've got, about this thing about the Romans having 12 days at Saturnalia. I'm not sure they got pissed up because they had a crap calendar. Perhaps they had a crap calendar because they were pissed up and partying all the time. Right, very flippant. Excuse me. I'll take Glenn Morris next, please. Comrade Morris.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Andrew, thank you very much. That was a really good talk. I enjoyed that. A couple of points. I think Paddy mentioned about the personal giving as something that might already would occur, of course, in socialism, in terms of goods would be available to people when they needed them. I think there's something fundamentally different, though. If one is, if you like, celebrating something and giving a gift, that's not quite the same as commodities that are used for the functioning of society, in my view. So what I'm getting at is I tend to agree with Paula, and that is I spend a lot of time making things myself because that's what I do. But I think if you invest your time and your care in an object And for instance, I make a lot of sort of leather belts and I give them away as presents to people, among other things. But if I was to receive something like that, it's way more important than something, if you like, that's been manufactured or sold in capitalism itself. But it probably would also have a certain importance and a personal touch, if you like, if it, even in socialism, if someone was to make something, they invested their time in it and made it and given it to you, it would take on an importance, I believe, that would be quite specific between those two people, the giver and the receiver. So I do think that would be important. And I think it would be fundamentally different from commodities that were available to allow the proper running of society. So that would be the first point. The other thing, two other points. One is on the you know, the Christmas and everything else and all that stuff. I mean, of course, we now know that when I was a kiddie, churches were sort of packed, and religion, as certainly the Church of England, tended to be much more at the forefront than it is now. And I think a lot of churches, they will tell you, are struggling. But I think that these celebrations are often also an excuse for they tend to sort of highlight charities and St. Martin's in the Fields and all the things that we hear about. And I think they're probably quite convenient for capitalism, because I think capitalism, you know, uses charities as a means of you know, getting out of its duty to people. You know, they you know, politicians loved being photographed with sort of charitable causes and all that sort of thing. But we all know about that, so I kind of won't dwell on that. But I suppose the one really important, in my head anyway, thing I wanted to say was, if and when socialism is established, one of the fundamental problems I think we have now is that when one discusses socialism with people, the responses you tend to get, in my view, are very much, if you like, framed in a capitalist kind of viewpoint. So people will tend to respond in the way that the ideas you're putting forward would be in a capitalist society. So they can't imagine someone doing something or certain things happening that socialists would tend to imagine happening. They can't imagine that happening because their brains, if you like, are so conditioned to think that human beings would behave as they do now in capitalism. And I think the evidence is research and so on, it very strongly would suggest that they wouldn't. But getting people to think that is very difficult indeed. But that leads me on to the point. And the point is that if and when socialism is established, I think what we don't know is actually totally unknown. So we see celebration and we see all the things in terms of people getting together, celebrating, giving gifts in a very capitalist context. What we can't imagine, I suspect, is the unimaginable joy and how utterly wonderful it would be in socialism to be celebrating, because it won't be with the white noise of capitalists in the background. However we celebrate now, however, whatever joy we get from it now, and it's limited, we've still got this kind of constant white noise of there's always war, there's always something dreadful going on, there's always children starving. In socialism, none of that would exist. So the point being, I suspect none of us can imagine how utterly amazing it will be. It will be an entirely new mental conditioning, if you like. So, and that's all I wanted to say. Thanks.
Can I ask you, Glenn, this is something which occurred to me then. Thanks for that contribution. About when we, I mean, under capitalism now, if you take the birthday list, the classic, or the Christmas list, it tends to be a list of things that I don't have, you know, and that I can't afford or I can't get hold of or whatever. And I'm very pleased when I get that, whatever it may be. In a society in which with free access, when that's not an issue, how do you think that people would kind of frame, or how would you frame if somebody asked you for a birthday list or a
Sorry, are you asking me, Andy?
Yes, yeah. Because you're somebody who makes things, and I just wondered whether, you know, if you're, you know, so the classic thing now is, you know, what do you want for your birthday? And here's a list of things. They tend to be a list of things that I can't get hold of, or I can't afford, or I can't, but in a society of free access, you know, where that's not actually what I'm asking for, I just wonder how people will frame the kind of things that they want, and how you, as somebody who's kind of making things for people, would kind of ascertain those kind of needs, or what kind of things people would appreciate if it's not moderated by money.
Okay, well, I'm sure other people will have a viewpoint on that too. But for me, I guess if I was answering that question, I mean, if I make something, I have to, in the current, if you like, the way I operate now, I mean, it might take me all day to make a very, very good belt. It may not be very good in everyone's view, but that would be getting the best quality materials and really spending the time saddle stitching it properly and making sure it's really beautifully made and it will last all their lives. So that is my driving force, and that gives me a lot of pleasure. And I would suspect that in socialism, what they're not, if you like, to take the other side of it, then what they can't do now is put their personality, imprint their personalities on production. It's very much their small cog in a very, very big machine. So they can't really have ownership of what they're making. They can't control the quality. In fact, if anything, they're pushed to do the opposite and make sure they're making rubbish, to be honest. So I think there would be a great, huge reward, a huge personal reward and satisfaction from making things really well from the best materials you can and to last. So that would be a pleasure in itself. And I think, although what I said earlier about, referring to Paddy's comment about the product, if you like, being slightly different if it's personally made, actually in reality, production throughout socialism would be brilliant. I mean, everything would be made with the best available materials, with the best skills available, and made to last. I mean, it's so contrary to where we are now. As I said, it's almost impossible to imagine the beauty and how wonderful it could be, because all these things would be made like that. If someone, an individual, made a gift, then even better. You know, they're putting their own personal stamp on it. In the wider sense, I guess you'd have groups of people collaborating on how to make a product as well as possible and in an environmentally friendly way as possible. The complete opposite of what you have now. I hope that answers your question, Andy.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you both, comrades. So, Paul, would you mind if I take Howard first, because he's not spoken yet? Is that okay, comrade?
Of course, yeah.
Okay, thank you. I'll take Howard next and then Paul. Thank you.
Thanks. I'm not muted there, am I? No, okay.
No, we're fine.
No, okay. Thanks, Steve. First of all, I just want to congratulate Andy on a great talk, so well-balanced and so informative in every respect. Thanks very much indeed for that. And also, Glenn, I mean, the comments Glenn made a few minutes ago were absolutely spot on in every respect. And, you know, I love that. I don't love it, but I so much appreciate that concept of white noise behind anything positive happening in capitalism. Positive things happen to you, happen to the people around you, but you can't help thinking what's going on elsewhere in capitalism all the time. Very, very good concept indeed. And the idea that we'd enjoy celebration so much more if that wasn't happening. The other thing I wanted to mention was this sort of opposition that Andy made between this opposition he made between celebration being either, what did he say? I think. Innate or inherited, or something that was sort of part of a culture. What was the word you used, Andy?
Instrumental.
That's the word, instrumental.
Meaning that there's a function outside of ourselves.
Should have written it down, sorry. Innate or instrumental. And sort of my take on that is that it's both, because this sort of instrumental aspect couldn't exist without, in a sense, without it sort of being, without it being innate, without there being the potential anyway in human beings for this to happen. I mean, the same applies to all forms of behaviour, really. They're all innate, really, at one level. Otherwise, they couldn't happen at all. And I mean, you mentioned this question of celebrations, these regular celebrations like birthdays and so on, not being able to happen before there was some way of counting, some way of knowing you were born on a certain day and it was your birthday. And that's sort of evidence of that, isn't it? Because the instrumental nature of such things couldn't exist because the material circumstances weren't there to allow that to happen. So you need the material circumstances. You also need something in the background, as it were, something fundamental to human beings and to, if you like, to, don't like to use human nature, but, to what's there in human beings sort of absolutely fundamentally. So, you know, my sort of take on that is that celebration, birthdays, festivities, what you like, are, you know, they're both innate and instrumental.
Thanks, Howard. And I mean, another aspect which I didn't go into was the, if you like, the kind of neuron level type responses that we get from pleasure, and that pleasure tends to, you know, reinforce our particular kind of behavior. And if we enjoy communal activities and we enjoy celebrating, then that tends to, you know, reinforce that. Kind of like Eric from really, I think, you know, pointed away towards that kind of research. And that's so you could almost add that as the kind of as something else on the balance of the innate side of our need to celebrate.
Okay, thank you. Can I invite Paula?
Hello. Yeah. It's just going back to something that Glenn had said about religion. And I have to say, I do envy religious people because they get together and they sing and they feel that they're part of a community and they're all together and they're united. And I know it's all a lot of crap that they're uniting against, but there's still that basic, fundamental, I don't know, human thing where part of us, we do need to feel that we belong to a community and we need to feel part of something. So I think once we've got socialism, you know, obviously we're not going to be singing about God and Jesus, but I think we'll still be doing the same thing. We'll still be celebrating being part of, you know, one belief system, one community. Anyway, that's my point.
Yeah, which I suppose it raises an interesting question. You know, we're making the assumption that in a socialist society without borders, where, you know, we only the earth in common, will that generate a new kind of form of consciousness? You know, and I think that one thing that we've been of the reason I think that I quoted Marx there and also William Morris was perhaps the, you know, we shied away from, and I understand why, you know, but we shied away from discussions of spiritualism, because spiritual aspect of human nature, but if we are also materialists, then it suggests that if there was a new global form of production, that new mental forms would follow from that. And it may well be that that a kind of global consciousness, it might, you know, is maybe the kind of thing that you're suggesting, you know, could replace that effectively, the kind of universal consciousness that membership of a religion currently gives.
Okay, I've forgotten, was it Paula speaking? Did you want to come back, Paula, or is that okay? Can we move on? Okay, I'll take Joel then. Carry on, Joel.
No, just say sorry.
It's all right.
It takes the time to unmute. But yeah, absolutely. I agree with Andy there. Yeah. I think there is. I'm kind of like remarks on that. There is a kind of, I mean, put it in inverted commas, spiritual. But there is something within people that, you know, that there is something. It's not just all about meeting material needs. It's about a social bond, isn't it? Mm. That's what we're all about.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll take Joel now then, please.
Two points. Thank you. It's going back to the making something for somebody. I think if somebody is not capable of making a certain object or something, and they would like that object to be made, I mean, it's and they can find somebody to make it for them. I mean, surely and that person's going to invest as the best, use the best materials and use all the mental and physical abilities. I mean, surely when that object is made, the person will get some joy from it. There'll be obviously a bond between the person who's made it and the person who's receiving it. And the other one is just going back to the envious of religious organisations. Well, I mean, there are plenty of organisations that celebrate singing and dancing and playing instruments, which are not religious. I mean, so personally, I'm not envious of religious people on that point. But thank you.
I'll take Moggy next then.
Hello. Yes, I'd just like to reinforce what Joel's just said, it's not just religious people that get together and sing. You can join a folk club. You can sing your heart out as much as you like with a bunch of people that enjoy the same sort of music. That's not religious music. And then the other thing is, I totally agree with Glenn about giving people things that you've made yourself. There's a lot more love and care in that, and that would go on under socialism, because there's no point in going out and getting something from a shop to give to somebody, because they can go and get it themselves free of charge. So I get a lot of pleasure out of baking for people at Christmas, and my family's always been the same. If you make something at home, my daughter's very good at arts and crafts, she always makes lovely things for people and gives them as presents. And I think that's the way we would go under socialism.
Do you want to come back in, Andy?
No, I think that's...
No, is that okay? nothing contentious at all, was there? Okay, Comrade Buick?
I've got nothing to say. I pressed the...
Okay. Right. So, Pat, I think Pat Deutz might want to say something. She's typing. Just while, as there's nobody just in speaking to you just at the moment, just ask your question about the as you're so knowledgeable about dance and music. It struck me that the picture that you showed of the cave painting looks very much like a Fest Noz in Brittany. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
No.
Or one of the dances in the Fest Noz.
No.
Which is basically what they do is in a big group, they'll all hold hands together. And basically, it's one step sideways, one step back. One step sideways, one step the other side. And then they lift the hands and all this. And it looks quite boring, but it must be very, very intense if that's part of your culture to be involved in that sort of thing. Anyway, that's just my observation. So Pat, comrade Deutz, I hope I'm pronouncing your second name correctly, comrade.
Yeah, that'll do fine, thank you. And hello, everyone. I really wanted to say, apart from the enjoyment that other people have also expressed about the talk, but what a pleasure it is to hear this kind of positive discussion about what it might be like in a socialist society. Talking about it as a really a possible and what we look forward to happening. It reminds me really of my early days in the party when there was much more of this kind of discussion. And I remember the shock it was to me as a young member. When a member sort of shrugged his shoulders and said, "Well, I know it's not going to happen in our lifetime," and that was rather a surprise to me because I didn't think that was expected it to happen every day, but it wasn't really quite the attitude that I expected to have. Unfortunately, that member did die at quite a young age, but. Really, on on the positive thing, it really this kind of discussion is a great pleasure, and I'm sort of new to these meetings, I have to say. And well, thank you all very much.
Thank you, Pat. I mean, and I think that if you can't read a book like News from Nowhere by William Morris without recognizing the sheer joy of those characters. It's kind of built in, it's kind of built into living like that. And again, I think it's maybe we've perhaps shied away a little bit from talking about these kind of aspects of the social society. We've concentrated, and quite rightly, we've concentrated on material aspects of everybody will have enough to eat and with good housing and we're going to build stuff properly and we're going to have a global society. But I think really, I think what's emerged from me listening to everybody's, contributions and from Pat's contributions is that we should perhaps be talking about this more. But I suppose people's worry is that you then start to come across as kind of talking about something mystical force, rather than something that arises spontaneously from having a society of free access.
Well, I agree, Pat. I'm totally behind you there. And I think it's been a really enjoyable discussion and it's made me feel quite happy.
Okay, we've got Doogie. Would you like to come in, please, comrade?
Yeah, I mean, that was a very good book. I enjoyed it. Right. One thing I think we don't mention sometimes is, when we get socialism, people will be treated with respect, right? People who've got disabilities or whatever, and they'll be looked after, really, if they need to be looked after. This society doesn't do that, really, My experience of mental health is that they've closed all the day centres, right? And they cut the hospital beds and they've cut services, right? To the bone, right? In mental health. And also physical problems as well. People who are disabled physically or whatever, they'll get the best care and the best treatment. There won't be any war, there won't be any starvation. It'll be a brilliant world.
Yeah, and I think that you also raise an interesting point there as well is that, one of the functions of festivals, which I hadn't in capitalism, which I hadn't really talked about or thought about really before that contribution, the opium of the people type of argument that, you have a miserable year, you can't pay the mortgage and you can't hardly, you feed yourself and your jobs are insecure. But, for this week, you can forget about all that, it's going to be glorious and fantastic and how things could be and you're happy and boy. And then of course you go back to the January blues. But I think that's probably an important aspect of celebrations under capitalism, which we haven't probably thought enough about.
But as we've not got anybody in the speaking queue for them, just one observation. So as I was walking back home tonight, it occurred to me, we're coming up to this celebration where it's supposed to be all love for all mankind and what have you. And then we can walk past people in the street that got nothing or they're in real, really bad situation. And we can only do a certain amount for them. You know, you can't solve their problem, and you can't get involved too much because you don't have the time, or you don't. Yeah, you know, it just makes the way that capitalism is organized, the way that class society is organized, is that we don't act in a human way to other people. We just do not see them. We don't want to see them. You know, and I'm as guilty as this as anybody else. You know, any other class, because we can only give. We've only got a certain amount of spare cash or what have you to try and make a difference. You know, I mean, part of my trying to make a difference money goes on party work, but also a small amount goes on to charitable work. But we cannot see other people as we would want to be seen if we were in that situation. It's just a disgraceful type of society that we live in, and that is what is taught as the norm. That is what people think. Yeah, that's normal. That's fine. That's somebody else. It's not my problem. Which is just such a shame for a social animal. Right. Well, we've still not got anybody in the queue. but Vin is Vincent. Oh, we've got Howard. Okay. Well, can I take Howard first? Can I take Vin first?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, okay, yeah.
Thank you. Vin.
All right. I mean, I missed the beginning of the talk, but yeah, what I heard was great. It reminds me of the early chapter of News from Nowhere, where he gets a lift across the river and offers him some coins, and the bloke says, "Well, it's very kind of you to give me these, but like, if everyone who I took across the river gave me something, I'm going to be snowed under, you know, and this is my job." I'm kind of thinking that actually giving people things is going to be more tiresome for the receiver than anything else when, you know, the whole world's there. I think sort of kindness and giving up time is something that will be appreciated rather than sort of things. I mean, like comrade who said, you know, like her daughter's a good baker. Yeah, that sort of thing would be nice. But I think sort of physical things, because, you know, we're no longer going to be fetishizing these things. And probably just, I mean, you know, under capitalism now, I'm thinking I've got too much shit. You know, but in socialism, you know, no one's going to have anything superfluous simply because, you know, you don't need to hoard any stuff because it's there. You know, we're all going to be making them, these things. And that's really all I was going to say.
Do you want to come back on that, Andy?
Yeah, so, I mean, grieving, I think it also comes back to the question that I was kind of asking earlier in a sort of semi-jocular way, but it's an interesting one. You know, if it's your birthday, and assuming that we are in a social society of free access, what's my birthday list? And if somebody asked me, well, you know, what do you want for your birthday? And you need you to do a list. Well, you know, it's not going to be the things I can't afford or I can't get hold of. It's going to be something else. And I'm kind of intrigued. We've talked about the kind of giving side of it, people making things such like, but as a person who, if somebody asked you, in socialism, what would you like for your birthday? What kind of things might we answer?
Yeah, I mean, I think because we're not fetishizing, they're not going to be commodities. I think our interest in possessions and things is going to dwindle. I think a lot of, you know, I mean, the spectacular economy is such that, you know, people want things partly because they think, you know, if I have this thing, I'll be happier. If I have this thing, I'll be happier. If I do this, I'll be happier. Because it's always an illusion anyway, and it drives capitalism. I just think sort of things are going to be just so less important.
I think in a socialist society,
you're not allowed to do that.
Oh, sorry. Right, I'm going to do my cue then.
I'll let you in. I'll let you in, Paula, this time.
Well,
as it's pertinent.
Okay. Right. So, In response to the comrade's last comment, in a socialist society, what I would want for my birthday, or, you know, because it's autumn or because it's winter or it's summer or some such thing, or there's been a big storm, is a hug. I think that's what we all need. It's just it's just a hug, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that doesn't contradict what I say at all.
Does that not count?
Yeah, I think it absolutely counts. It absolutely does count.
Does that mean a party? Yeah,
right, now come on, give order. Comrade Moss, please.
I was actually going to address the same question as Vin. But to say, first of all, can't remember who it was now, just brought up the question of whether we would have... I think it was Andy, wasn't it, who said, you know, what would you say in a socialist society if somebody said, what do you want for your birthday? I don't think people would say that. I think that's essentially a capitalist question in the sense that, you know, it's the kind of question you might ask in this society. In a socialist society... you wouldn't sort of want things in the same way because they'd be available. I mean, you'd be very, very pleased if you received something that you didn't expect and that was very nice and that was special. And, you know, frankly, I don't give presents either birthday or Christmas, which I sort of go to a shop and buy new generally. I usually go to a charity shop because at a charity shop, the odds are you're going to find something that's unique or relatively unique anyway, and that you think the person it's destined for is going to appreciate, you know, more than if it was something new, more than if it was sort of, you know, something that's just come out and so on and lots of people are buying or want. So, I sort of disagree with what Paddy said earlier about, you know, the idea that we wouldn't give gifts in socialism. I think we would. I think we would give gifts. But, you know, there'd be gifts which would be, you know, have a special meaning and a special value of the kind they don't have in this society and that they can't have in a capitalist society.
Okay, if you don't want to come back, Andy, I'll bring Comrade Thompson in. Joel.
Hi. Some of what I've got to say has been answered by Howard and Vin. But... yeah, I mean, obviously we're conditioned under capitalism to have to buy people presents for various reasons. And I would have thought that conditioning would sort of start to dwindle away under socialism. And like Howard says, and Glenn has said, and a few other people, it'll be just something really unique that somebody will make for you or get for you, which will bring you pleasure. But there won't be that same drive to have to buy people presents and, like we have at Christmas, families breaking up and arguing over when they go Christmas shopping. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Moggy, please.
Hello. Yes, just going back to what I think it was Howard said, that he would go and get something from a charity shop. Just over 10 years ago, my daughter was living in England. And while she was living there, her baby boy was born. And so, of course, she was then getting involved in the round of going to children's birthday parties. And this can be rather expensive because when you've got a little kid, they seem to get invited to parties every weekend. There's a party on, and it's very expensive if you've got to go to a shop all the time and buy something to take to this party. And so my daughter made this rule. She was putting on a little party for her little boy, and she said to everybody that she invited, do not bring anything new. If you want to bring as a present, bring a pre-loved toy. Mm. And people had never... it hadn't occurred to people in England to do that. And but she started a bit of a trend, apparently. So once she had made that rule that they They had to bring something that was pre-loved. She said, well, kids don't care. You know, they don't care whether it's a toy that's been owned by another child. You know, if it's been washed and it's nice and clean, they're happy to receive it and they just love it. And so this idea caught on with lots of other people. And she said, well, you know, quite frankly, people can't afford to be going out buying presents every week just so their kids can go to somebody's party. So, yeah, that I agree with that.
Andy, do you want to come back?
No, I think it's fine. I mean, one thing that I would add to that, I think with the kind of social media platforms, obviously, which wouldn't be Facebook, but I mean, when it's your birthday and you get a bunch of people just coming on saying happy birthday, you know, that's and people perhaps haven't contacted you for a long time, or, you know, and the kind of good feeling that you get about that. I mean, it just those are the kind of things, I think, which are also going to be replacing material goods.
Okay, can I take Comrade Mike Brown, please?
Yeah, thanks for that talk, Andy. It's quite interesting. But if we can get away from the commodity production side of the gift giving, that which is basically a restricted society where you have to have, you know, I wouldn't want anything in social society apart from music, a few mushrooms, the social side. I wouldn't be bothered about birthdays. They're only a human construct when you have calendars. They don't mean anything otherwise. But I think we should concentrate on the things like, I would give people poems. If somebody was getting old and they were retiring from whatever job they were helping out other people. But there'd be no more hugs, a lot more music. I think it's part of humans, even hominids. I mean, I came across a book about 10 years ago about singing Neanderthals and postulating ideas that it was singing triggered all ways of communicating and probably led to language. Really, you know, we wouldn't be bothered about things like that, anything about giving gifts. I mean, I was disappointed to hear all these people talking about what sort of gifts they would give in the social society. Yeah, that's commodity production. And we need to think differently. There'd be a lot more festivals once the ecological damage is being repaired. There'd be a hell of a lot more festivals. That's what we're here to do. Sing and dance. Not play.
That's a brilliant observation, Michael. Excuse me. Absolutely brilliant observation. That's what we're here to do, sing and dance. Love the idea. Andy, I'm sure you'd like to come back to that.
No, I mean, I could say, I mean, you know, non-material signs of affection and friendship, you know, are worth probably more than a lot of physical goods anyway. And I reading the Fromm books, Eric Fromm books, it just reminded me of the pleasure that we get from, you know, somebody pulling over for you to pass when you're in a car, you know, and that feeling reinforcing those kind of primeval urges towards cooperation. And the kind of and the way that impacts on our neural system as well. So all these things, you know, seem to me to just reinforce the fact that it's not, you know, when we cease giving each other commodities, we're not really going to have any great loss there in terms of human happiness.
Okay, I'm conscious of the time we've gone on a bit longer than usual, but that's not a problem. So what I'm going to say is, if you want to put a point, make a point, or put a question in, just get it in now, because I think we're coming to a winding up. So I'll take Carla next, please.
Oh, hi, Sandy. Yeah, maybe we won't be quite so egotistical in a socialist society. I mean, birthdays. What's the big deal about birthdays? I mean, I don't place that much importance on it personally. Mind you, that's maybe because, you know, as you get older, you really rather not. But but you know, it's like we've still got small children in the family, and it's quite obscene. You know, Christmas is now next week, and they are going to get in, you know, everyone's going to buy them gifts. It is quite obscene, and they open them and they just put them to the side. And same with birthdays. And I just think, you know, this is such a capitalist, you know, life. And I think that perhaps things that we'll celebrate, or I'd like to think that we'd celebrate in a social society, would be personal celebrations like puberty. You know, girls becoming women, boys becoming men, or however we will celebrate that. People getting together, people making commitment together. You know, not obviously necessarily marriage or anything like this. So conventional, but the seasons, the change of the seasons, you know, anything, any excuse to get together and, like Mike Brown, sing and dance. That's mine.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Carla. Paula, and then John Cumming.
Just come back to what Mike was saying. I joined Lancaster branch about 6 months ago. And in that time, Mike has really kindly just sent me a really expensive book because he wanted me to read it. And it was a gift from nowhere. It wasn't my birthday. It wasn't Christmas. You know, it was just a gift. And that's what, you know, that's what socialists do, you know. I think we all appreciate the value of just giving freely to each other. That's all I want to say. Thank you.
Okay, John Cumming, comrade.
Yes, I agree that capitalism taints and straitjackets most kind of celebrations that we have. So it kind of ruins everything, it impinges upon everything, and the gift giving is all quite hypocritical. And I've actually been stopped from giving gifts to people years ago on the basis that, oh, well, it's not their birthday, or, oh, it's not Christmas yet, wait till Christmas. So you're kind of straitjacketed into doing this ritualised gift giving and ritualised celebrations that are often hijacked by, if not the capitalist class, certainly their agents in government and so on, who feel the need to channel everything down a certain pro-capitalist route. I find the whole celebration thing in this society anyway all very hypocritical and tiresome. And as for birthdays, I agree with the person who said that it's just another day. And it may be that in a socialist society, people may take the opportunity to do better things than we currently do. I think in a socialist society, to a certain extent, we'll be celebrating almost every day. But it doesn't mean if you've got an image in your head of people behaving raucously and drunkenly, I don't think it will be of that nature. But there'll just be a more celebratory tone to many of our everyday experiences, I would think, or hope, I expect.
Yep.
Thanks.
Okay, can we have Comrade Edwards, Freddie, please? Freddie, you need to unmute.
Yeah, thanks, Comrade. Yeah, I mean, in many ways, I mean, it's I've not been able to listen to everything tonight for a number of reasons, but I think I've heard most of it. And the point that Paula was making earlier on in her last address there about just receiving something unexpectedly, and it wasn't her birthday, etc. It's interesting, we've got so many variations on the concepts of celebration and birthdays and Christmas, etc. You know, when we look around at the world as it is just now, in fact, there's something on Discord that I'd read earlier about the number of voluntary hours that people put in unpaid work that they put in throughout the world, that in itself tells us everything. I think that people generally behave unselfishly. We'll always get the odd few that have a gripe about something for whatever reason. But I don't particularly look at this concept of celebrating birthdays and Christmas and Easter or whatever it might be. I think wherever possible, all of us, or most of us anyway, try to be kind and understanding of other people, be it some of them maybe what you might want to describe as less fortunate. And when we do have socialism, we will have so much less of time we'll be able to associate with each other a lot more than that time anyway. Thank you.
Okay, bring Moggy back in.
Hello, you get sick of hearing my voice in a minute. just harking back to what Carla said about maybe celebrating other things in your life, like puberty and all this sort of thing. Well, Jewish people have been doing that for years. They celebrate bar mitzvah and bat mitzvah, which is the same thing. I think it was John was saying that your birthday is just another day. Well, no, it isn't. It might be for some people. I was born 2 months too early. And so I was a very tiny, very delicate child. I had every illness that was going. And for me, every birthday is a celebration. I always think, wow, I never thought I'd get to this one. And I'm the luckiest person in the world, because I'm a Scottish country dancer and my birthday is on Hogmanay. And I celebrate my birthday by going to the Hogmanay dance. And I can't think of anything else I would like for my birthday than to be at a Hogmanay dance, dancing with all my friends and having a rip-roaring time. So that's all I've got to say on it.
Perfect.
Okay, thank you, comrade. Just as a point of information about what Freddie was saying about in a socialist society, we'd have more time because we won't be doing as much work. There's an interesting program on Radio 4, and I will put the link up, which was talking about the work that was done in a hunter-gatherer society. I know that Howard's listened to it because I think he's the one who passed us the information about people that were actually working 15 hours a week to gain their livelihood at a very low level of subsistence, but with very low levels of technology as well. So the freeing up of our time is something that's going to be so important in a socialist society. Anyway, so I won't bang on. I will just ask. Oh, thank you, Paddy. Thanks, Paddy. So the link's gone on the speaking queue to what I was referring to. It's only 1/4 an hour. It's very, very interesting. So if I could ask you if you'd like to wind up a little, Andy.
No, I mean, I've really found that discussion so interesting. And I think it's really put a lot of things into my mind to think about. And like I say, I think ultimately when I read News from Nowhere and to get the sense of just the joy of just everyday living, then it does actually raise a question of whether actual events of celebration actually will be necessary in a socialist society. So that's been a very interesting new kind of idea for me to pursue. So thank you very much, everybody. Extremely interesting contributions.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Andy.
Okay, if I may, I'll call the meeting to hold. And thank you all for
your time. Thanks, everybody.
On your behalf, thank Comrade Thomas for his excellent talk. And see you some more. Okay, thank you, and I'll take care.
Thank you.